National Edition on the Voice of America. Coming up, could the masked Islamic State terrorist who beheaded several hostages finally have been identified? Well, we'll have an exclusive report from the front lines of the battle between Syrian Christian fighters and Islamic State militants in northeastern Syria. And we'll tell you why Washington is paying such close attention to Nigeria's upcoming election. I'm Michael Lippin. Media reports say the masked Islamic State militant who appeared in several recent videos of hostage beheadings has been tentatively identified. The reports quote friends of Kuwaiti-born London resident Mohammed Mwazi as saying they believe that he is the tall, British-accented speaker dubbed Jihadi John. Two U.S. government sources told the Reuters news agency that that investigators believe Mwazi is the masked man. But VOA's Jamie Detmer in Rome says European intelligence sources have refused to confirm that identification, saying the issue is more complicated. A U.S. National Security Council spokeswoman would not confirm or deny the reports about the identity of Jihadi John. Assyrian and Kurdish militias battling Islamic State militants in northeastern Syria are asking the international community to provide them with weapons capable of changing the balance of power in the region. A leader with the Syriac Military Council told VOA that the Assyrian militia is holding its ground against the Islamic State with the help of Kurdish fighters. The militia leader said his group does not need more fighters, but increased weapons and air support that only foreign powers could provide. Well, Islamic State militants have captured several Assyrian Christian villages in Syria's Hasakah province in recent days. The militants also have taken hundreds of Christian hostages in an apparent act of ethnic cleansing. VOA Kurdish service reporter Zana Omer went to the frontline village of Tel Makes, still in Assyrian Christian hands, and has this report, narrated by Rob Rafael.
Get down. Here, all this is open area. They control these villages. At night, we are scared they'll infiltrate us from this area. In daytime, they have snipers. That village was a base of two snipers. The river separates us, and the same thing for the other villages. Just the river is between us.
Over there is Tal Nasri, and then Tal Shamiran and Tal Tamir. All these villages are controlled by IS. They have hidden cells which appear at night.
This area is called Tel Mahas. The Kabor River is the border, where the Assyrian Christian and Kurdish YPG fighters on this side and Islamic State on the other, where IS fighters have kidnapped the civilians. These Assyrian fighters are guarding now. The fate of the hundreds of Assyrian Christian hostages held by Islamic State remains unclear. And after days of local fighters asking for international help, coalition military aircraft could finally be heard over the area Thursday. For Zana Omer in Tel Mahas, Syria, Robert Rafael, VOA News.
Russia is warning Western countries not to impose more sanctions against it, saying that such threats show that the West is opposed to following through on a truce for eastern Ukraine. Both the United States and some leaders in Europe have threatened to impose tougher sanctions on Moscow if it does not stop supporting pro-Russian separatists in the Ukrainian conflict. On Thursday, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov called those threats an attempt to deflect attention from the need to follow through on the terms of a ceasefire, which has only recently begun to take hold. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has paid a surprise visit to the country's northeast, the epicenter of a Boko Haram Islamist insurgency. On Thursday, the president met with Nigerian troops in Baga and Mubi, two towns the army recently recaptured from the insurgents. Mr. Jonathan's office said he also did an aerial inspection of other recaptured areas and stopped in the Borno state capital Maiduguri to meet with the state governor. While violence in northeastern Nigeria continued on Thursday, witnesses said a suicide bomber killed at least 19 people in the Borno state town of Biu, the site of previous attacks claimed by Boko Haram. Separately, the French news agency said twin bombings near a bus station and university in the central Nigerian city of Jos killed 17 people. A top U.S. State Department official says Nigeria's upcoming national election is a bellwether for the African continent, in which a dozen nations are planning elections in the next 2 years. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Nigeria is Africa's most populous nation, its biggest economy, and the continent's top oil producer. And so it follows that everyone, including top U.S. officials, are watching as Nigeria plans to hold a key national election. The vote was set for this month, but was moved back when the military said it would not be able to provide sufficient security amid fighting the extremist Boko Haram group, which has waged a war of terror in the nation's north. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Linda Thomas-Greenfield told reporters this week she has been personally assured by top Nigerian officials that the vote will be held in late March.
We're all watching this election. This election will be a bellwether for the entire continent. The world is watching, the continent is watching, Nigeria's neighbors are watching this election, and our hope is that the election will be free and fair, that it will be transparent, it will be peaceful, and that the results of the election will reflect the will of the people of Nigeria.
She noted the United States is working with every single one of the dozen or so African nations planning to hold elections this year and in 2016, including Burundi and Ethiopia. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
U.S. regulators have banned internet service providers from charging content providers high fees for faster streaming of web material. Well, following the vote on so-called net neutrality rules, the Federal Communications Commission Chairman Tom Wheeler said the American people reasonably expect and deserve an internet that is fast, fair, and open. Today, he said, they got what they deserve. And also in the U.S., a law that legalizes marijuana use is now in effect for Washington, D.C. The new law, which voters passed in a referendum last November, took effect shortly after midnight Thursday. The law allows adults 21 and over to privately possess up to 56 grams of marijuana and to grow small amounts of marijuana indoors. But buying, selling, and smoking marijuana in public is still against the law. The U.S. capital city joins the states of Alaska, Colorado, and Washington in legalizing recreational marijuana use. Well, that's it for International Edition on the Voice of America. We'll be back at 0330 Universal Time for an expanded look at the latest world news. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington.
I'm Jim Stevenson with Business News on the Voice of America. IBM CEO says the company's plan to revamp its business to shift away from hardware and focus on business analytics, cloud computing, mobile service, and security is on track. In a media briefing ahead of an investor conference in New York Thursday, Virginia Romity said the company plans that the new tech market should make up 40% of IBM's business, or about $40 billion in the next 4 years. That's up from 13% 5 years ago, 27% by the end of this year. Once the dominant PC maker known as Big Blue, IBM is confronting a sales slump as it struggles to adapt to big changes in the way businesses buy software and other commercial technology. It issued another disappointing earnings report in January as both revenue and profit fell in the December quarter. A plunge in gas prices last month lowered consumer prices by the most in 6 years, but excluding the volatile food and energy costs, prices rose. The consumer price index fell 0.7% in January. That's the sharpest drop since December 2008, according to Labor Department statistics released Thursday. Tumbling prices at the pump drove nearly all of the decline. Core prices, which exclude food and energy, rose 0.2%. Despite the sharp drop in the overall index, economists see signs that many prices are moving higher. The cost of services such as hotels, restaurant, food, and rents all rose last month, lifting core prices. More Americans sought unemployment aid last week, although the number of applications was still consistent with steady hiring. The Labor Department says the weekly applications rose 31,000 to a seasonally adjusted 313,000. That's the most in 6 weeks. Applications are a proxy for potential layoffs. That's a look at business news on VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're glad to have you with us on VOA Global today. By the way, we are asking you to send your photos from the Lunar New Year celebrations, whatever they may be. If it was just a small celebration you were involved in or something really large, something spectacular, send them to us. We're going to be looking through all the photos, and we're going to put the one that we like the most on our Facebook homepage. So we look forward to posting that. Right now, we've got Ira Melman and the American Cafe.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. This has been a very cold winter for much of the United States. In its biggest city, New York, many of its millions of residents can't afford to stay warm. VOA's Ramon Taylor has the story here in the cafe.
For the more than 8 million people who call New York City home, the key to surviving the cold is simple. Bundle up and stay indoors whenever possible. But for the less fortunate, it's more complicated. Many can't even afford a winter coat.
In New York City today, there are over 2 million people who are having a terrible time finding food on the table, to clothe their children, and to exist in a normal, everyday way. So clothes are a very important part of that.
Tim Gibson is a volunteer at New York Cares, the largest volunteer management organization in New York City. Each year, beginning in October, they team up with local businesses and nonprofits to collect and distribute used coats to those in need. The demand this year, 103,000. One quarter of the requests are for children. The initiative extends to 300 drop-off locations throughout the city and beyond. Online users can donate a brand new jacket through Amazon.com. With temperatures regularly dropping below freezing and time running out, New York Cares has collected and donated approximately 71,000 coats so far this winter. As Derek Matai explains, the locals still in need are not always the most obvious candidates.
What a lot of people don't realize, or some people do realize, is the city is super expensive. And a lot of the coats that are going out to help other people, they are not only going out to people who may be on the streets without a home, but they're hardworking New Yorkers that just can't afford that next meal or to provide warmth for their families.
For some, the gift of warmth is personal and sometimes taken for granted.
When you wear a coat, you feel happy, you feel more relaxed, you know, you feel warm.
Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
From the cold of New York to the warmth and sunshine of Hawaii, Michael Sullivan drew the enviable assignment of visiting the 50th U.S. state for a report into research into sharks. Scientists are getting a shark's eye view now of their environment to better understand the threats that face this important predator.
The University of Hawaii research site on Coconut Island is just minutes by motorboat from the shore of Oahu, the most populated island in the Hawaiian chain. The facility is a good place to observe sharks since they are native to local waters, and some are kept in this sheltered bay for study. Carl Meyer does research on sharks and tries to learn about their habits.
When sharks are feeding and hopefully how much they're eating, and that's what we use these captive animals for.
Scientists also monitor the behavior of sharks at sea, placing sensing pellets in their food to monitor digestion, measuring the animals, and then releasing them with radio-equipped electronic tags attached to their fins. The researchers recently fitted a sandbar shark with a camera for a rare shark's eye view of its daily activities.
When we recovered the camera, we saw that the shark had spent the day in a large aggregation of sharks. Not just sandbar sharks, but also black-tip sharks and many, many scalloped hammerhead sharks.
Sharks are swift and lethal, but don't usually prey on humans. Meyer says that rare attacks are amplified by the media and dramatized in films. He says sharks are important top-level predators that help maintain the balance of the marine systems. University of Hawaii scientists are studying endangered and vulnerable shark populations, and Carl Meyer says that humans are more of a risk to sharks than sharks to humans. And he says the results of those environmental changes cannot always be predicted. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Coconut Island, Hawaii.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Join us on air and online at voanews.com.
Hi, everyone. This is David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Do you own a pet? Would you like some help training them or keeping track of them? Well, there's some new devices that might be just what you need. If you own a dog and you want to train it to fetch and then wait quietly, the auto trainer might be just the trick. It fires a ball and then dispenses food when your dog returns the ball to the machine. Kirsten Dillon told Britain's Sky News the auto trainer helps her with her French bulldog, Louis.
So what it's doing is, if you listen, it's telling Louis that food is coming by reaching a certain pitch. So he knows, he's learning that if he waits patiently and quietly, more to the point, food is going to be delivered.
The auto trainer is just one of several devices that can help teach Rover what to do. With life becoming more hectic in our modern world, Kirsten Dillon says so-called pet tech is just what people need.
We're busier and busier, and we're looking for more and more ways to help us out. Of course, there's a huge market for assistance dogs, and it's growing and it's growing. And there are lots of people with physical disabilities that actually need this technology. So it isn't just a case of lazy owners. There are people out there that do need help.
A U.S.-based company, Fitbark, makes an activity monitor to make sure your dog gets enough exercise. It costs about $70. The Petsy Connect by Petzilla even lets owners watch their pets and interact with them from anywhere using a smartphone. That sells for about $170. And if you want to make sure that Rover is healthy, there's even a pet urine testing kit available from Petnostics that allows owners to analyze their pet's urine and see the results on their smartphone. But is all this tech good for that human-animal bond we all enjoy? Well, Jordan Shelley of Dogs Today magazine told Sky News that the tech helps, but the face-to-snout time is still needed.
But as long as there's some kind of a balance, you know, and they're used as training aids, then it's not a problem. You know, when you take vitamin C tablets, you also continue eating your fruit, yeah? It's the same sort of thing.
The American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals says that in 2012, 62% of American households owned at least one pet. Americans spent more than $54 billion on their pets last year, and that number is expected to go up. From tracking your pets to tracking firearms now, a Silicon Valley startup has come up with a device that will help police departments know when an officer's gun has been fired. The device from Yardarm Technologies lets dispatchers know when an officer's gun goes off. It also tracks the weapon and tells what direction it was fired in. This device uses geolocation to show where officers are, and it can tell the dispatcher if an officer draws a gun. Jim Schaff is Yardarm's marketing vice president.
So we're connecting the firearm to the internet, and from there we can do a lot of things with it.
Schaff told the Associated Press that the device doesn't interfere with officers' performance in any way.
The officer simply inserts it into the back of the firearm, and now it's installed. They don't even know it's there anymore.
The Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department in California is currently testing the system. Sheriff Phil Wovak says that it will allow his department to see when officers need help.
We're going to be able to see in real time if our officers are in trouble and they're unable to ask for assistance. That's the worst nightmare for any police officer in the field.
The Yardarm device relies on the internet and connects to officers' smartphones using Bluetooth. It can also feed information to crime scene investigators to let them know how a gun was used. So, what do you think? Let us know your thoughts on these stories or anything else you hear on our program by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. That's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
VOA Global is our collection of various podcasts that we produce every day here at the Voice of America, and a lot of different ways that you can reach us at VOA Global. You can go to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And, of course, when you stop by there, please like us. We're also on SoundCloud and on Twitter. You can follow my Twitter feed at VOA Stevenson. And I'll keep you up to date on all the latest news and developments around the clock every day. Time for sports on the Voice of America. I'm Jim Stevenson. A strong wind welcomed the PGA Tour to Florida on Thursday, and Jim Herman didn't mind one bit. He saved par from the fairway twice, kept bogeys off of his card for a 5-under par 65, and took the early lead at the Honda Classic at PGA National. He was one shot ahead of Brendan Steele. Rory McIlroy got off to a rugged start in the afternoon. The world's top player already was 4-over par through 6 holes. For starters, Herman was happy just to be playing. This was the second straight week that he was in the Monday qualifier when he got word that he was in the tournament. And he has lived in South Florida for more than a decade, so he's a little bit used to the wind. Phil Mickelson was there. He opened with a 71. Day one of the Joburg Open has concluded, with South Africa's Nick Henning leading the way after a fine round of 62. It's a pretty big event with 201 players spread out over 2 courses. Mark Tompkins has more.
Well, there's very much a South African feel to the top of the leaderboard after day one of the Joburg Open. Nick Henning, a fine round of 62, sees him at the top, 9-under par after a great round on the West course. And Eagle 3 saw him at 4-under par through his opening 3 holes. And that really set the tone for the rest of his round.
I knew I was swinging nicely, but, you know, I haven't made a score like that for many, many years. So it's a really nice surprise.
He's one shot clear of another South African, Titch Moore, who got a hole in one on the par 3-5th, and the Belgian Thomas Peters, who's also at 8-under par, and they were joined later on in the afternoon by Tjaart van der Vaart, who also shot a round of 63 on the West course. The West course providing the best scores today. The best score on the East course, Wally Cutsia, down in a tie for 8th place with a 66. And a mention for the Englishman Sam Hutsby, who's yet to make the cut this year. He finished with a 66, 6-under par, to leave him 3 shots up the lead, held overnight by Nick Henning, who will play on the East course tomorrow.
Mark Tompkins from Johannesburg. A federal judge has cleared the way for Minnesota Vikings running back Adrian Peterson to be reinstated, ruling that a National Football League arbitrator failed to meet his duty in a child abuse case that shook the league. U.S. District Judge David Doty issued the order Thursday, less than 3 weeks after hearing oral arguments. Doty overruled NFL arbitrator Harold Henderson's denial of Peterson's appeal. The league had suspended Peterson through at least April 15th under its personal conduct policy. That's sports on VOA.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald on The Voice of America, and this is a Top 5 Countdown. We're partying with the 5 most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart for the week ending February 28th, 2015. Now, I want you all to be on your best behavior, because we greet a true musical legend this week. He's just minutes away, but first, let's roll Maroon 5 in 5th place with Sugar. These guys were on hand at Sunday's Oscar telecast. Hold on for more. Sugar! Maroon 5 steps back a slot to 5th place with Sugar. On Sunday, the band was in Los Angeles performing at the Academy Awards ceremony. Adam Levine and company sang Lost Stars from the movie Begin Again. It was nominated for Best Original Song but lost to Glory by John Legend and Common. Now, as for that musical legend I mentioned, Paul McCartney turns up in our 4th place song, 4-5 Seconds, along with Rihanna and Kanye West. Paul's been away from the top 5 for a very long time. Stay with me for details.
Now I'm 4-5 seconds from wildin', and we got 3 more days till Friday. I'm just trying to make it back home by Monday morning. I swear I wish somebody would tell me, ooh, that's all I want.
Rihanna, Kanye West, and Paul McCartney jumped two slots to fourth place with 4 or 5 seconds. It's the lead single from Rihanna's upcoming eighth album, which features Kanye as executive producer. We don't have a release date yet, but it should be soon. As for Paul, he hasn't cracked the U.S. top five since 1983, when he and Michael Jackson topped the Hot 100 with Say, Say, Say. Well, it's all a bit of an anti-climax from here, I'm afraid. Good old Hozier remains in third place with Take Me to Church.
Take me to church, I worship like a dog at the shrine of your life. I'll tell you my sins and you can sharpen your knife. Offer me that deathless death, the good God, let me give you my life. Take me to church, I worship like a dog at the shrine of your life. I'll tell you my sins and you can sharpen your knife. Offer me that deathless death, the good God, let me give you my life.
Hozier remains stuck in third place with Take Me to Church. It has hit number one in 12 countries, including Austria, Canada, the Czech Republic, Hungary, Lebanon, Poland, and Switzerland. Ed Sheeran spends another week in second place with Thinking Out Loud. Ed's calendar is full, and I'll break it down after the song.
So honey, now, take me into your loving arms. Kiss me under the light of a thousand stars. Place your head on my beating heart. I'm thinking now.
Ed Sheeran treads water in second place with Thinking Out Loud. On Wednesday, he's at the Brit Awards, where he may pick up three trophies. After that, Ed flies to the Middle East and India before touring Asia, Australia, and New Zealand. 1 week's rest, and then he hits South America. Up at number one, it's 7 weeks and counting for Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars with Uptown Funk. This single is topping charts the world over, but there's one place you'll never hear Mark sing. Keep it here for more.
Girl sent you hallelujah. Girl sent you hallelujah. Girl sent you hallelujah. Cause Uptown Funk don't give it to you. Cause Uptown Funk.
Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars rule the Hot 100 for a lucky seventh week with Uptown Funk. Mark tells the New York Post that while the song's a hit, he knows his own voice is terrible and he won't even sing in the shower. Well, our shower of hits is over, but it all starts again next week. Thank you so much for dropping by. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
It's been rather a tough time for residents of a Dutch town. They've been cowering under umbrellas after an aggressive eagle owl began swooping out of the sky, sinking its talons into them and gouging their flesh. The so-called terror owl has become somewhat of a media sensation after attacking people in recent weeks in and around Purmerend. It's about 20 kilometers north of Amsterdam. The hardest hit area in the town is an assisted living complex for people with disabilities. A spokeswoman for the complex, Lieselotte de Bruin, said that the owl has attacked up to 20 people in recent weeks, sometimes causing injuries that required stitches. One resident who happened to fall prey to this owl told local media it was quite a painful experience. He said it was like having a brick laced with nails thrown at your head. I don't know how he knows that a brick laced with nails feels like that, but that's what he said. The town is warning residents to steer clear of the bird if possible. It's reported to be quite large, 60 to 75 centimeters tall. And the town has applied for a permit to catch the owl, which is a protected species. Seems like the residents need protection. Officials suspect the terror owl was once kept in captivity. They say such aggressive behavior is not known among wild eagle owls, and the species is not actually commonly found in the region. In the meantime, the town has advised its residents not to approach the bird and use umbrellas, if possible, while they're walking around in the evening. Our umbrellas are up as we're ready to leave Studio 22 at our VOA headquarters. We thank you for joining us today. Our director is Tracy Carter. Daryl Smith is our engineer. And our managing editor is Diane Gal. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope to join with you again tomorrow for another edition of VOA Global.